This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 138.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello and welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one wonderful sense of humor minute at a time. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Nailed it.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
So this minute starts with, he's a dead man. Which I think is just...
So I guess we figured out what happened if he's in the cliffhanger.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. It's straight to the point. You're a dead man. That Ed's right on it. He's not pulling punches. It ends with... Yeah, it ends with what I like to call the final old man Jimmy look.
Yep.
Which is pretty great.
So, and it also starts not only with finding out the cliffhanger of yesterday's minute that Henry would be a dead man, but it starts off with Henry doing some mighty hair tussling.
He's like trying to get the lice out.
When he leans his head back up, his hair has grown maybe 4 inches.
I feel like maybe that's a little more shaking off the cocaine withdrawal.
Yeah,
it feels like that maybe.
Yeah.
I like that only at this point, very far in, do we hear, what about the kids? As if they both remembered that they had kids.
It's important to note that the children, the Hill children, at this time in real life, they had two daughters and a son. And they were all very excited at the prospect of the Witness Protection Program because they thought they were going on vacation. So
that's fun for the kids.
Yep. So...
They relocate them to Disney.
Yeah. Then and it's funny is that Karen in the book says how, you know, they're old enough to read the book. They're old enough to, you know, they're old enough to read. They're not old enough. The book didn't exist. They're old enough to read the papers. She says they knew about who.
Read the papers.
Yeah. They knew about all the people who've been killed. They read all the stories in the paper about Jimmy and Paulie. She says they knew about Stax and Maury. They knew Tommy disappeared. They could see everything was falling apart. And yet they thought they were going on vacation.
It was too late.
Yeah, it was too late.
They could see everything. Yeah. What about the kids? They think sort of last part. The movie version of these characters are not the most capable parents, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking about the real people. I don't know.
Well.
But those late dinners. Yeah. I mean, come on. They have school.
So then we get, as Ed continues to lay down the tough love, we see Paulie getting perped walked out of the... Is this a new location or is this... No, this is the place where he was making the sausages.
Yeah. That social club.
The new social club. And as he's being walked out, we get the delivery. We get one last zinger from Tootie.
Oh, Tootie goes out on the high note.
Whoever sold you those suits had a wonderful sense of humor. Which I've got to admit, like, okay, so your brother is a mob boss, and now the what is the roost has come home? What is the phrase, Connor?
The chickens have come home to roost.
Chickens have come home to roost, and Tootie to the last, loyal to the last straw, gonna make fun of their suits.
That's all he's got.
Also, He's also prescient. He says, why don't you go after those real crooks on Wall Street?
Yes, yeah, right. Which is, Tootie was early on the Occupy Wall Street front.
Like, Tootie knew all about the mortgage, the bad mortgages, the bad loans. he was in there.
Yep.
Trying to warn everybody, but no one would listen to Tootie.
Right.
You only got one leg, Tootie, they'd say. How would you know about mortgages?
I know one thing. You don't waste a bunch of aprons. And those guys are wasting billions of aprons.
Whoever just sold billions and billions of aprons.
Whoever sold you those suits had a wonderful sense of humor. I love the concept of that, though. That supposes that there's a tailor who sold Fed suits and then as they walked off laughed and goes, ha-ha, they bought those suits.
Well, it'll be assumed that anyone who knows anything about suits would know laughable suits versus, good suits.
Yeah.
and these guys were just too dumb to not know.
Yeah. Now that said, looking at their suits,
they seem fine.
They seem fine. I mean, they're not. I mean, yeah. There's. I mean, I can be a little snobbish about clothes, or I know Josh, you can, but they're just simple black suits. They're not doing anything.
Mandated in the FBI, I believe. Plus, they're not the blue suits.
Yeah.
They're not
making
a lot of money here. It's not like they pull up, buying $5,000 self tailored suits. They're just wearing black suits.
Yeah. Now
it's
I
not
will.
Barney Cooper Smith over here.
Now, I will say that unlike when Jimmy was perp walked yesterday, none of these feds have a mustache, which I feel like does not fit in 1980. At least one of them would have had a nice, bushy mustache.
Also, Paulie has a cigarette.
Yeah, true.
I like that Paulie goes out with his head high.
So here's an interesting question. I know nothing about law enforcement, and I know nothing about procedures or Miranda rights or anything like that. Jimmy walked out handcuffed hands in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
Paulie, who at this point is in his 70s and a much older man, although very intimidating looking, handcuffed arms behind his back.
Well, they're just different cops.
Yeah.
Jimmy's legitimately bronchial.
Jimmy was like, hey, I got to smoke the cigarette. So they put the handcuffs in front.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to smoke the cigarette?
I will say that Paulie goes out head held high.
Yep.
Yep.
He's got his brother there to back him up.
Yeah.
Look at the size of Paulie. He could rip those guys apart like a gorilla.
He's enormous.
Even at 70.
Yeah. Even then, he's even arrested, he's intimidating.
I like that the hair duster had a lot to do during these scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever the hair duster is, they brought him in. Oh, we got a hair duster guy. He's great. It's 8 to 14 years.
It's the McConkie of hair dusting. So. Oh, God.
A lot of people talk about that Copacabana shop, but they don't talk about the hair dusting.
This is what's rated. In the last 10 minutes, we're really going to go deep. We're going to talk about the hairstylist and the hair dusting assistant. And
there was totally one.
Yeah.
Totally. I really do. It is. We mentioned this before, but it is so interesting to look at like what we thought of as old Robert De Niro here versus actual old Robert De Niro.
As seen in The Intern.
Yeah, he must have a preference. Boy, I wish I looked like that when I was this age.
That's true.
Let's jump to the courthouse scene now. So now the trial's going on.
Yep.
Can you? I know listeners at home cannot, but you guys should pause it at the 29-second mark.
Oh wait, to see are you talking about to the upper left of Ed McDonald?
Yes.
Yes. The courtroom sketch artist with an enormous pad.
Yes,
I saw that for the first time ever doing this, and I was like, "Whoa, she's sketching furiously." It's like
at first I thought it was a giant newspaper, and I thought that's an odd way to sit. And then I realized it was a sketch artist.
It's the pad. The pad isn't 11x17. It's got to be like 32x24. It's the size of a poster. It's just
yeah. No, this is gonna be 36x24 at least. Yeah,
definitely.
Now this is the beginning of. What I find really interesting about this film, and we started talking a little bit about it last week with the dolly zoom shot and how Josh wasn't really into the visual trickery, and how up to that point, really, the camera had pretty much stayed at eye level and it had been very grounded. This particular scene, basically the final scene of the film, but there's one more little scene, is so bizarre.
So bizarre.
On many levels.
Right.
Not the least of which, this is shot and staged very dreamlike. It's smoky. The lighting is strange.
The room is like I've always had a hard time with the room. And I've been in a couple of courtrooms. I've been in many, and I don't know if this is an actual. Maybe this actual courtroom, but the room feels very airy, right? Yes. Like it's very big, you know. And like
most courtrooms I've been to are very
small, right? Yeah.
I was in a huge courtroom once. The only time I was on a jury, it was a huge room.
Oh, yeah. But Josh, you had a lot to say last week about the style of shooting. What do you feel about this scene?
I actually like it. Because I don't know, it's not really this shot, but, when they break the fourth wall, it throws you out of it, which I think is the intended.
Well, let's not talk about the fourth wall break until Friday.
Yeah, no, I know, but yeah, it's all part of that same thing. Yeah. I mean, basically like,
it's not yet. At this point, all this is an airy, dreamlike kind of scene. We don't know, like, and I've got issues with that later on, but that'll be a tease.
What it's doing is presaging, like, something weird's happening, and we haven't hit it yet.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to that weird.
Yeah. I know.
Bizarrely, it's almost like you're yanked out of your seat.
Yeah. So, you know, in a way,
going along with one style, and now all of a sudden it's very sort of dreamlike and David Lynchian almost.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, like it actually makes that other shot work better because you realize, like, oh, they're trying to tell you that everything's going topsy turvy now. So I think if you combine it with that, then maybe that, you know, that sort of makes a little more sense. And that was just your first inkling of it. Right. Even going far enough back to, you know, the big boom shot, the crane shot at when Karen's leaving Jimmy's place. You know, maybe that's all sort of, it's all starting to break down, basically, just even the way that we're looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think this shot starts, you know, with kind of Henry's point of view, but we see Henry, the camera's behind Henry, and we see the whole courtroom in front of him, and we see, you know, Ed McDonald questioning him, and, you know, and then the kind of spin around, and then having the camera focused on Henry as he's being questioned with, you know, then with the zoom, I think it has ties to other shots of the movie. And then even the cut to Jimmy and his enormous glasses, you know, it zooms in on Jimmy when he fingers him. Not like that. Like when he points him out.
Whoa.
You know? And yeah, I mean, it's a combination of, okay, this is the visual cinematography that we've been comfortable with, but I agree with you, Connor. There's something about the tone of it the feel of it feels weird. Yeah. Yeah. So, cause this is not the environment they want. This is the environment that they've been avoiding their entire lives.
Good point. Yeah.
I mean, we've been in a courtroom before.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this. This is just,
bizarre. But they were losing.
Yeah.
We'll get to the real reason why it's bizarre later at the end of the week. But what's not bizarre, but instead what is awesome, is Henry's pompadour.
Yeah, he dressed up.
But it's almost like he went back to the old 50s, because that's almost a 50s style pompadour he's got going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially from the profile shot. It just curves up and away from his forehead.
Yep. That's a good look.
It's not a bad look.
Not a bad look. I do like, as part of this, you know, like, we don't really hear the questioning until it finishes with Henry's voiceover, and he's kind of closing. This is, again, that layering of scenes where Henry's kind of closing the scene about the witness protection program, and then it's transitioning into the courtroom scene, but it further goes back to explain how easy it was for him to disappear. You know, like his, you know,
I wrote this down.
Yeah.
It was easy for us to disappear. My house was in my mother-in-law's name. My cars were registered to my wife. My social security cards and driver's licenses were phonies. I never voted or paid taxes. My birth certificate and arrest sheet were all that showed I was alive.
Yep.
And again, it's one of those other, like, little bits of information that puts everything into perspective and how different his life is than yours. Our lives are committed to protecting all of that stuff all the time.
Right.
And knowing it. And he got completely away from the system. Good government bullshit.
Yeah. Maybe that's the key to stop identity theft, is just not have an identity.
That's a good idea.
So the fun fact is, the first Social Security card was issued in 1936. And since then, there have been 34 official versions of the card.
Interesting.
Because of that red bastard Rosa. Sorry.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was interesting, looking back at the book in terms of this time period, up until, so this is interesting, because we get to the courtroom and it's Henry on the stand, and we see you know, that being the defendants of Jimmy and Pauly, in reality, they were tried separately, and in fact, I believe Jimmy's trial wasn't until 1984.
Well, that I think contributes to the weird dreamlike quality, because it isn't really so much reality that this happened. This is more like a metaphor for what he did.
Yeah, exactly.
And that could be why it's so dreamy.
Yeah.
But I think Pauly was first charged with just helping him get the no-show job.
Yep, yep.
That's the first conviction they put him away for. And then they got him again for a worse one. But
yeah,
like Henry was lining up and knocking him down in terms of testifying against people. He put a lot of people in prison, but Pauly's was weird. It was just for the no-show job,
right? Yeah, and Jimmy's eventually was a murder, but again, it wasn't until 84. So there's literally years of, you know. So they get put in the witness protection program, and this is, and Karen goes into it in the book towards the end of it, which I think is interesting. They kept them in and around. They were in the witness protection program, and they made them like pack their house very quickly. Like she even says, they just filled black garbage bags with their stuff. Like they just get out. And they kept them in and around the New York metro area. So they had them in a motel in Riverhead. They had them in Connecticut. They had them out in Montauk. And then in the morning, everyone would drive into Brooklyn to McDonald's office. And she would just sit there, do a needlepoint, and the kids would just hang out while Henry would be talking to the lawyers. You know, and then that went on while they were getting all the stuff that they were getting until they finally settled down someplace else. So just like talk about like, you know, impacting their life. Like I just think that's crazy. You know, like the actual how the witness protection actually works. And then once they settled them down, Henry would be flown to New York to then, you know, give his testimony and then fly back out.
What kind of like My Blue Heaven?
Yeah, a little bit like My Blue Heaven. What I think is interesting is that you know, given Jimmy's propensity to kill anybody who, you know, like, I can't believe they kept him alive, to be honest. I can't believe Henry
actually made it to stand. They've never lost anybody.
Yeah, yeah. So
then they eventually got Pauly on fraud. That was the big conviction. But at first, it was later that year. Yeah. So for the first couple of months, he was just in prison on helping Henry get a no-show job. And then a couple of months later, he got sent up the river for fraud. But it's crazy.
Yeah.
He really... He was a linchpin for all of this activity, and they were so shocked. I can't imagine what it was like in that office once they realized how much information Henry had and how many cases they were going to close.
Yep.
But he closed a lot of cases for them.
Yep. Now, before we wrap up, let's talk about Jimmy's glasses. I feel like those are magnifying lenses on purpose.
So I think these are the same glasses they had.
Yeah,
and I thought I thought that we had bigger ones in the end here, and I was a little disappointed. I was like, wait, those are just
same
ones. I really thought there were bigger ones coming.
His eyes do look big, though.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
From the angle, I think his eyes are magnified a little bit bigger.
Yeah. So anyway, I like the glasses.
The fuck count for this minute is one.
All right.
One fuck.
Cool. Well, I don't got anything else.
I have nothing.
Yeah. I'm good. I think that'll do. So that is going to do for minute 138 and the wonderful sense of humor of that minute. You can listen tomorrow for minute 139 as we're getting close. Until then, you can check us out on Twitter at Goodfellas Min and on Instagram and Facebook at Goodfellas Minute. And you can find all of our episodes at GoodfellasMinute.com. To support the show, you can go to Patreon.com/GFM or you can go to GoodfellasMinute.com/support where you can shop via Amazon or where you could get your identity stolen. It's a possibility. Henry didn't get Amazon. That's the difference.
We don't know. We're not saying you will.
I'm not. We don't know for sure, but
right.
I mean, it's likely. You're not doing anybody any favors here. You have any questions you want to email us in, although we will not deal with your identity theft problem. I just want to make that clear. You can email us. I'm not fixing anything. It's not my problem. It's just a link. That's all we're doing. We're taking a little taste, getting the link. I don't have to fix that. Contact at goodfellowsman.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up to you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.